This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
And for our first edition of Creature Feature for 2024, we welcome back Jordana White. Jordana, a happy new year to you.
Morena, thanks for having me back.
And we're going to launch this year with something a little bit different on the Creature Feature, Jordana.
Yeah, I'm smiling and grimacing at the same time because the intro said that we're highlighting one of our extra special guests. And I mean, it, kind of yes, kind of no. So today we're going to talk about ticks. So not kind of our usual approach, but it is a New Zealand native creature that we're talking about today. But it's a creature, so we're going to feature it.
Can I assume it's not that you're caring for them?
That's
in the
more
hospital?
Yeah. That's why I'm kind of laughing because they aren't so much extra special guests for the Wildlife Hospital, but they are extra special guests in a way for the hosts of those ticks, which are our native birds, in particular red-billed gulls, is what we'll be talking about today in relation to those ticks. So I think probably most people know what a tick is.
Take us through that.
It's an insect, and it likes to, it latches on to a host. So depending on the type of tick, it could be various different types of hosts. Like some ticks will be attracted to cattle, some will be attracted to humans, some birds. And in New Zealand, we do have some, generally speaking, not the ones that like humans, which is great. But there are some endemic ticks that are only found here in New Zealand. So they are from here. They haven't come across from anywhere else. They're not invasive. They're not predatory or introduced. They have always been here. And they, in particular, use birds, native birds, as their hosts, which makes sense.
So they're not bed bugs?
They are not, no. You know, if you're lucky, you'll never come across one at all. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have come across these insects, these creatures, if it weren't for working with wildlife. So not something for anybody to worry about. And I know probably half the listeners are feeling really itchy right now thinking about it, but nothing for anybody to worry about as people. So don't panic. Pain your listeners' ears by trying to pronounce the name of this tick. It's very long and scientific sounding, but there is a particular tick that we come across quite often in our work with red-billed gulls, which, it's that sort of their preferred host. And because we have a large breeding colony of red-billed gulls here in Dunedin at Tairoa Head, it is something that we do see fairly often, especially in the spring and early summer. So in December, for example, we had quite a busy seabird ward with red-billed gulls that had tick issues. So what happens with the ticks? So the ticks latch onto their host and they are basic. I mean, they're being like little vampires, like sucking blood, and they kind of engorge themselves. They get quite big. They expand with the blood, and once they're either full or something happens with the host, like for example with birds, when they molt their feathers, those ticks will drop off. So they'll stay on the host for as long as they can. Basically, either they're full or they molt the feathers, depending on the species.
They don't move from one to another.
They do eventually move from one to another. So if for example the bird was to molt its feathers, then it would walk along until it found another host. And they can walk quite a long ways as well, looking for those other birds to latch onto. They will. That's how they survive. So they'll keep going until they find another host. And what happens other than being just generally kind of ick to think about something being covered in ticks is it does actually cause some pretty serious issues for the host in this case. So not always the case, but in this case for red-billed gulls. So we call it tick paralysis. So it can actually having a high, what we call a high burden of ticks can paralyze a bird, can paralyze a red-billed gull.
Gosh.
Which is quite startling. But what happens is that the tick it latches on and it has a chemical mix, which is quite complex, in its saliva glands. And that gets put into the bird, essentially, into the bird's system. And it acts as a toxin and it poisons them. And then that's when you start to see signs of sickness and illness.
And is that ostensibly so that it can get the blood flowing in the same way as like a sand fly or something might?
I don't actually know the answer to that. I think that's probably a pretty good hypothesis, that there's something about and perhaps it's some sort of like maybe an anticoagulant or something like that to keep, as you say, to keep the blood flowing. I'm not sure actually exactly how that works. But it does, what it means is that if the bird, and this is typical where that spring season and that early summer season is when red-billed gulls are breeding. So they're parenting, hopefully, ideally, if breeding season is going well, that's a really challenging time for any bird. So they're taking care of a chick. So they're having to do extra work. They're having to forage more or further, or they're not getting as much nutrition themselves because they're focusing on a chick. And that means that their immune systems are down. So they're a little bit run down and they might be more susceptible to these sort of toxins coming from the tick saliva. So that's typically when we see them turning up with these symptoms and with the ticks. And the symptoms, it causes, we would say, sort of neurological looking signs. So it's dizziness, maybe like they look a little wobbly or ataxic. They're not moving necessarily properly. They probably won't be able to fly after a certain point when this has started really affecting them. So if they'd be quite quiet. So if you were to approach this gull that's looking a little bit sad, would it fly away? That's a sign for sure. And if things are kind of really progressing, they might not be able to hold their head up properly. So you might see a kind of a wobbly headed gull. And if it's really advanced, that's when the actual paralysis takes hold. So they won't be able to stand or to walk.
Who is looking out for these seagulls? It's not probably top of our priorities, right? Is someone checking the colony itself, or is these birds coming from all over the place?
A lot of the gulls that we see are coming from the Tairoa Head colony. And that, of course, is also where the Royal Northern Albatross are. And so there are rangers that are out every day observing the albatross and also keeping an eye out on the red-billed gull colony. So there oftentimes it will be the rangers out at Tairoa Head that are bringing these gulls to us. But there will be also members of the public who notice something's off with a bird, or sometimes the ecotourism operators like Rachel McGregor from Port to Port, she keeps an eye on those things. She knows what to look for as well. So we might get a heads up from her, or she might hand them off to Doc, for example. Eventually, though, even if they aren't to that sort of like paralyzed point, they're starting to lose condition because they're not able to care for themselves. They're not able to preen, so they lose their waterproofing. They're not able to fly, so they can't feed themselves. So they are starting to lose condition and lose weight. So it is. I will say the patients that have come to us recently with the tick paralysis or high tick burden have been pretty rough looking. They're not in a good way, and it's just the tick, I say high tick burden, but like, what would you estimate to be a high tick burden for a red-billed gull?
Well, how large are these things for a start?
The ticks?
Yeah.
Before or after they're on the, I know. Okay, I'm sorry to give you a visual. I'll give you the visual.
I guess 20 of them would be dangerous.
Yeah, well, certainly. Yep. So we have, and anywhere, so our patients, anywhere from 2 to 3 ticks.
Oh, really?
To 12 to 15, like 12 to 15 would be pretty high. And the question that you asked about how big they are, I actually have no idea how big they are before they bite their host, but when they're like quite full, they're probably get about as big as your pinky nail.
Oh, okay. That is quite big.
It's quite big and gross. Sorry, everybody. But yeah, it's an endemic native species. So we're going to talk about it. Great realistic enthusiasm, Jeff. But yeah, the tick burden could be anywhere from 2 to 15.
Okay.
It just sort of depends on what sort of their immune system was like before they were bitten by the tick. So that 2 to 3 might really harm a bird that was kind of, struggling anyway.
I guess we always assume with insects that, where there's 2, there's 2,000. Is that the case?
Probably would think so in a red-billed gull colony, especially that one's quite a sizable colony, that there would be a lot of ticks. So it seems to be, affecting, it probably does affect more, obviously more birds than we're actually getting in at the hospital, which is fair enough. But it does seem to be that those sort of, they're problematic when they're birds that were struggling in the first place. And, possibly a gull will be able to manage to preen off ticks as they go. So it's not, they don't always take hold necessarily, because I imagine that at the colony, they're dealing with them pretty regularly, as you suggest. There would be a lot of.
I would have thought a bird would be in a good position to get rid of ticks.
But tricky, because the ticks tend to bite them on their heads and their necks. So it's harder for them to remove. And that's actually probably why I say that. Now that I've just said that out loud, I realize they probably actually are biting them everywhere, but the gulls are able to remove the ones that they can get to. So the ones that remain and become the problematic ones are the ones on the head and the neck, which are harder. You know, they should really just engage in that, like, preening their neighbors kind of thing.
They can learn a lot from the monkeys.
Help me out. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah, all right. Well, we'll write that down to work on that in 2024.
So is it just a case of removing them? Is that all you have to do?
Yes and no. So we do have to remove them quite carefully, and then we need to give them a lot of supportive care. So one of the things that we'll be doing is doing blood samples to test if they're anemic. So sometimes they'll need a little bit of extra iron if they've lost a lot of blood because of the tick burden. It would be more likely to be those ones that have the 12 to 15 sort of loading. And we give them, you know, a bit of pain relief just because they're feeling quite unwell. And we are giving them heaps of fluids and yummy fish to help support them through. And they are, even though they're not feeling well, and they look pretty rough when they come to us, they still somehow manage to be picky. So we do feed them like things like salmon and sardines and anchovies. And
they've got your number.
They really prefer the salmon, and they will let you know that they want the posh food and they don't want to deal with the anchovies. But they will eat the anchovies eventually, but they prefer the salmon. But nothing but the best for our guests. So it's a lot of support, and we're spritzing them with salt water every day to help them kind of get their waterproofing back up. They will spend a few days in our pool enclosure, so getting some time to get wet and get in the pool and kind of get into those natural preening behaviors once they've started to feel a little bit better.
Any suggestion, like there is with so many other things we talk about, any suggestion that climate change is having an impact on the length of the season or the proliferation of these, or is this just something that happens every year regardless?
It just, as a reminder, it is an endemic tick and it is on a native bird. So this kind of relationship has been happening for a very long time. So, well, that, which is not to say that climate change can't affect it. And I do think there's probably... yes, I would say the short answer is probably yes, there will be, especially if there is any difficulty in the food stock for the gulls, and that would perhaps, or there's a lot of rough weather, flooding, you know, any kind of rough sort of storms, that kind of thing, that would affect their overall health, it will make them more vulnerable to the tick burden.
Now,
so
with,
yes.
With other pests, we have groups in the community that, that are out there trapping. Doing their best to eradicate. I'm assuming we're not advocating for that.
We're not advocating to eradicate the other native species that we don't find as cute or as interesting. However, I will say, I just want to put this out because I think this is incredibly important. And I absolutely have to draw a line in the sand on this. So the signs that I just described to you around how they behave and how they look and what the symptoms are when they have a high tick burden or moving towards tick paralysis, unfortunately, are very similar to the signs of avian influenza.
Mm.
So this summer and this autumn, we need everybody to be on high alert for avian influenza symptoms. So if you see something, you know, like a gull that's kind of got a wobbly head, or it's looking, you know, ataxic or not, you know, kind of not walking properly, it just looks maybe like it's drunk or just something's, you know, not quite right, please do not approach or touch this bird, especially if you're seeing a whole bunch of them. In particular, if you're seeing a whole bunch of birds not acting right, there's a hotline that you can call through Ministry of Primary Industries, an 0800 number, or you can ring 0800-DOC-HOT and report that immediately.
Might seem like an obvious question, but why not?
Why not?
Why not go near them? Why not touch them? What's going to happen?
So avian influenza, if it is avian influenza, which we hope we are able to avoid this summer as we have in past seasons, there is a strain going around the world. It is currently moving through the subantarctic regions. If there is a slim chance, this strain is not as dangerous to humans, but there is a chance that you could actually contract avian influenza from
birds.
Bird flu. It's bird flu. Yep, that's right. We don't want that.
No.
We don't want our birds to have it. We hope they don't get it. But it's really important that you know the signs. And so, unfortunately, this is one of those cases where some people in the know will know, oh, yep, that's a red-billed gull. It's acting this way. It must have ticks. I'm going to pick it up and call doc and have them bring it to the hospital. Well, in this case, we don't want you to do that.
And chances are it's not going very far anyway. Just call doc.
Just call doc. Yep, call doc. Let them know. We don't want anybody getting sick from any of these birds. Also, ticks are gross. So even if it was just tick burden, you don't want to deal with that.
Look, it might not have been a pleasant discussion, but a really important one. And we learn something every time on Creature Feature. I just love it. And I know our listeners do too, Jordana. Thank you so much for bringing that to us today. And we look forward to our future conversations on the spot. Don't forget that you can support the work of Dunedin Wildlife Hospital in all sorts of ways. Hop onto their website and take a look around. You'll find many ways that you can keep the great work going. And we keep these conversations going too. We look forward to talking with you again, Jordana, a little bit further down the track.
Talk to you then.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz. Or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.